Welcome to the Cardboard Conjecture Podcast. We're a podcast about board games where we have opinions and conclusions formed on the basis of incomplete information. On this episode, we are going to continue with the critique of the Board Game Geek Top 100 by talking about games 50 to 41. And we're going to have something to say about it. Really? This episode of Cardboard Conjectures brought to you by Amazing Stories Comics and Dragon's Den Games. Welcome to the Cardboard Conjecture Podcast. I'm Norm.
And I'm Chris.
And we will always, well, not always, but typically we start off with games that we've been playing recently or stuff that we've been purchasing. And we are going to carry on with, what are we carrying on with, Chris?
The top 100 BGG games of all time as we critique and comment on them in our unique fashion.
And we are talking about games 50 to 41.
41, yeah. There's some goodies on this list.
Yeah.
Good ones coming up.
Yeah. Well, start us off with, we just finished, a little kind of spoiler, we just finished recording a segment for the Talking Tabletop. Yeah. And you got to talk about that GMT game again.
Oh, no, I don't want to talk about the GMT game again. I want to talk about other games. Okay. Well, I want people to listen to the other one.
That's true. Okay, well, go back. We talked about a GMT game that was awesome.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of issue with the title.
Yeah, the title's crazy. That's
a little bit.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
Yeah, it was good. But we had a really good game night last night because we actually ended up playing... we had six plays last night.
Oh,
I think we played four. Yeah, we played four games, but we played a couple of them multiple times. One that I want to talk about is Acropolis, which is a game that I've been looking for ages, and it's really hard to come by locally here because nobody deals with that publisher. But it's this really cool tile laying game where you're drafting hex tiles that are three hexes connected. And you're adding them to your Greek city, your Acropolis.
Yeah.
And they have different jurisdictions to them, like residential and temples and stuff like that. And they all score in unique ways. And you can play it sort of like number nine, where you can build up on one another. Anything that's on a higher level scores you more points. It's a really cool spatial game. I did really bad on it. But it's a really cool spatial game that I really enjoyed. And it's simple, it's quick, it plays really fast, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was fantastic. A really, really, really fun game. Sorry.
That's right.
Also, we played Mlem.
Oh, is that Reiner Knizia?
It's the new Reiner Knizia.
Yeah.
Cats in... I walked into this one with no interest whatsoever. And immediately after we finished playing it, I was like, could we play again?
That's good.
It's cool. Yeah, it's a really neat game where you're cats on a spaceship. You're flying past planets and moons and stuff, trying to land your cats on these different space objects. And all your cats have different abilities on them, too, that you can use during the journey. And it's Knizia, so it's push your luck. It's dice chucking. As always, he has no sixes on his dice. I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know if he hates the number six or what it is, but he always does something different on there. But it was really, really fun. It was a really cool game. Cool push your luck that I turned out I am the worst cat captain of all time. But it was a blast to play. Really, really enjoyed it. And then also, I just want to mention really quick.
Yeah.
I'm going to paraphrase Chris Isaac. And say I did a bad thing. I got hyped up in the Star Wars Unlimited CCG.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I bought.
You're gonna swore. I haven't played it.
Money spending so long. Yeah, but I'm gonna be good. I'm gonna be good this time. I promise. But it is really cool looking. I haven't played it yet, but I've opened up a booster box and looked at the cards, and it looks really fun. I think we're going to give it a shot this week a couple times, and I'll come back and I'll let you know what I think of that one. But it looks really cool, but I'm going to limit my spending. Word of God, I'm going to limit my spending on this one. So hopefully.
Yeah,
hyperspace foils that I got. Hopefully I can sell it to pay for this game. So,
so playing sideways economics, that's okay.
Yep. That's what I'm thinking.
You can get a sellable card that can continue your.
Yeah, I didn't get as lucky as my buddy Cody Thompson, who runs. I can't remember this game company right now, but he did published a game called Vamp on the Batwalk a few years ago. He got a card that's probably like a $400 card.
Oh, nice. Well, and that's such a crazy market because that could just drop away and
oh, good. Yeah, exactly. So I'm hoping to sell while it's hot. So we'll see how it goes.
Right on.
How about you? Sorry, I took up all that time.
No, that's okay. Because I would rather other people get sucked into CCGs than I. I had the compulsion to purchase another game by one of I have designers that are my faves.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden you start to realize, well, I got another one game from this person. I got another one. So I had to pick up Messina 1347 by Vladimir Suchi and co-designed with Raul Fernandez Apriasio, I think is how you say it.
I don't think that's how you say it at all.
I don't think that's how I say it. But it's
how you say it.
That's how I'm saying it. But it's published by Delicious Games, which is Suchi's company.
Mm-hmm.
When he kind of went his own way from when he went solo after Czech Games. But this is, the retired history teacher in me kind of geeked out because it's Plague. Rescue citizen, let them work in your estate and fight the plague. It is...
Man, who doesn't love to just fight the plague?
Who doesn't like to fight the plague in medieval Europe? Yes, come on. It's like you don't get enough trading in the Mediterranean game.
Yeah, exactly.
It is a map of Messina and a variable map because it can change depending on the players and the way you lay out the tiles.
Mm-hmm.
The drive is that there's boats coming in to port on every turn and they're bringing in the plague. And that plague spreads at the top of the turn. There are citizens that don't have the plague on their tile that you can rescue them, bring them to your state and put them in your state to work, to try to survive the plague. And it is, I just love the way this guy's brain works because I clicked into it right away. As we talked before about Pfister's vocabulary of icons.
Yep.
For me, Suchi, his vocabulary is his design arrangements.
Yes.
Like music. It makes sense to me. I know why and where this change is happening and how it's connected to these other things. Am I good at it?
No.
No.
That's fine.
But I played a couple solo games, you know, that will set up and learn as you go kind of thing.
Yep.
And I can't wait to have the opportunity to actually sit down and throw down with the game and go, all right, let's go. Give it to
us. Nice.
I don't know if you've had the chance to play it or...
No, and this I have not.
Blew under the radar because Evacuation came out like soon after. And sometimes some games get hyped more than others. And
Yeah, I remember the title and everything about it, but I don't think I've ever seen it even on a shelf anywhere. But
yeah. And the only reason I bought it was because it was Suchi. And
I was going to say, I mean, that was the reason right there.
Yeah. Well, and I buy games because O'Toole does the art, so you know, or Dufresne, right?
Yeah.
Cool. So that's
excellent.
What's been going on recently?
Nice.
I'm fired up to get into this list because
we've hit the top 50.
Batch.
Okay. Yeah.
You prime us up and you start us up. So
no, actually, I want you to start us off on this one here because this is another one of your favorite designers and stuff.
Yeah. Looking at the sequencing too.
Yeah, exactly.
You're letting me fall onto one of my favorites. So of course, also, we're critiquing the BGG Top 100. We are now going 50 to 41. I have the pleasure of starting with one of the designers that makes my brain hurt, but I repeatedly, it's like Slurpee headache and it subsides and then you go again because it was just such a cool feeling. On Mars by Vital Lacerda, be a part of the first Martian colony striving to be the best contributor. I have not played this yet. Artist Dio Nojo, right, as I mentioned. Published by Eagle Griffin. Part of that huge deluxe game series that they have, like the tuxedo box, the dress box size kind of games. I've not played this. I've heard fantastic things about this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have any spoilers. I have not even considered reading the rules or, you know, going into it because of that. You know, get a copy of a vinyl and you crack that cellophane and fresh game, right?
Yeah,
I'm just awed. The game has, as far as mechanisms goes, contracts, delayed purchases, end game bonuses, hex grid. It suits you. So as he would describe it, oh, you do one action and you do another action and then it's your turn's done. Simple. No, no, there's layers of engineered strategy that you have to consider. And I'm probably not that far off on how this operates as well. Have you seen, played, heard?
No, I have stayed away from this one. But it does look so cool. I would love to give this one a try at some point, because it does look right up my alley. A little bit heavier than I usually play, but still amazingly cool.
Well, just quickly scanning the description, a couple paragraphs that I pulled away, give me the sense of Kanban where you have to do things in phases. You can't start building unless you have blueprints, and to have that, you need resources. So there's this connected agenda that I'm discovering, and I love that of Kanban.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it looks really, really cool.
Now, if I know my purchasing situation, I know this is a game that's on the higher end. It's above
$100 for sure. Yeah, it's a very pricey game.
Yeah, so you got to go into this one knowing what your, hopefully what you get is what you pay kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody I know has a copy and there's an opportunity to play it, I will give it a shot. But it's definitely not on the list of games that I'm going to reach.
Plays one to four, they say best is three. And with heavy games, I concur that you start adding players and you start to quadruple the time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Cool. Well, that's a start of our list there. At the 50.
Nice, nice. Well, the next one on the list, number 49, is a game from 2017 called Anachrony. This is designed by David Turtsey, and is a time traveling game where you are using exosuits and time travel to ensure your vision for the future after the cataclysm. This game is so cool. I haven't played it in a couple of years, but oh my God, is this is like a Vital Lacerda game. Almost everything that you were saying about On Mars holds true on this one here, where you're doing things in certain sequences and stuff. You need to collect water in order to use your exosuits. The art is so cool in this one. The main board has got this like three-headed monument thing in the middle. Is so cool, but you basically have to use your exosuits in order to collect resources and such, and you can use time travel, so you can actually go to the future to collect things that you need right now, but you also have to remember to pay your future self back for those things, otherwise you couldn't have given it to your past self.
It's a paradox
in the first place. Yep, exactly. So you are it's four-dimensional chess. It is crazy. I really, really enjoyed this game. I think the production value is amazing.
They got some cool minis, yeah.
It's got some very cool minis in it, which aren't necessary, but they still are really neat.
I know about 15 people rolling their eyes at that statement right now.
Yes, they are so necessary. They're, of course they are. The only part of the game that matters.
Yeah, I... Yeah, I have played this a couple of times, and I've absolutely loved each time that I play it. Again, it's a 1 to 4 player game. It's like a 2 to 3 hour game. It's an epic, epic experience. Yeah, it says playtime here, 30 minutes to 120. No, it is two if you're really good. Three is going to be more likely. And I love the fact that BGG weight, it's actually in red numbers. It's a 4.02. It's a hefty, hefty game in terms of all the components going on in this. But man, it is, I think you would love this game, Norm.
I have not played it. Everybody who owns it and has played it has given me that same advice as, what are you doing?
Yeah. I am shocked.
And I love wordplay. Listen.
Yeah. This is totally you. And yeah, you have to manage all of your different workers because you have like 4 different types of workers that can do stuff as well. So it's fun. I need to play this one again soon because it is really cool.
And that's the sign right there was the sound.
Gotta get that to the table.
Exactly. Cool. Yep. Get on.
Well, switching gears big time on this one.
I'm so glad that you put this one in my sequence. This is a number 48 overall. This game was designed in 1876.
I believe by far the oldest game on the list. Ish. Probably by 100 years.
Yes. And it is, I should start talking like this, eh? It's Canadian game, eh? And it's flick your discs and make trick shots in this traditional Canadian dexterity game.
Man.
It's pretty much curling and dartboards combined, if that makes sense. Or shuffleboard and curling combined.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
It's Crokinole. I didn't even say the title yet. It's Crokinole. This game, for me at least, defines my journey into this hobby. Because I think I've played this before I could put skates on. And that's significant for a Canadian.
It's just people in the States listening to this like, before I could put skates on. What does that have to do with board games? Or anything?
Yeah. But then there's another part going,
Crokinole's just...
It's the flicking game extraordinaire.
Yeah,
this is the one that everything is rated against. And everybody who has not played this, once they play this, even if they play it recreationally, and when I say that, me being a stickler for the rules, because I'm of the type that it's one cheek touching the chair, and the chair doesn't move, and the table doesn't move, right? So one cheek rule, which for people who don't know is you gotta at least have one buttocks cheek on the chair at all. There's no standing up. There's no sliding the board around. There's no shucking your chair. Oh, if you nudged your chair, that's like family sued right there. Absolutely. But
I love the fact I clicked on it, of course, as you're talking, and I always look at the gallery while Norm is talking about games. And the only thing that you have in the gallery on like the thumbnails here is just different custom boards. Like it's nothing about actually the gameplay whatsoever, but just all the different, like a Green Lantern board and a pirate board. And yeah, it's
And here's the thing is that once you start playing this, and even if you play it on one of those, you know, Lee Valley checkers on one side, Crokinole on the other side, and there's rivets sticking through, even if you start with that, you're gonna want to get a $300 board. And the problem with that is there are hardly any manufacturers out there that of that quality level that you're backordered for a couple of years. So yeah, if you happen to see a quality Crokinole board for sale, pick it up.
Yeah, why aren't you making boards, Norm?
I've got a template prototype I'm working on, and of course the way I am, there's probably 6 iterations until I finally settle in with, okay, this is what's going to be done.
Yeah.
Now I got to find the time to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Plus, it is a classic game. I've played it very casually a couple times and always loved it. So.
Yeah. And I mean, you could suck at it. You can be great at it. Yep. You still enjoy the play.
Yeah.
It's not a review. So let's carry on at number 47.
Number 47 is another game that I absolutely adore that I'm not good at. And it is Blood Rage by Eric Lang, published by Cool Mini or Not, when it was still Cool Mini or Not. This is cool. This is Ragnarok has come. Secure your place in Valhalla in epic Viking battles. This is an area control, card drafting game. And it is so cool because you can go in thinking, okay, I am going to focus on actually losing every battle so I can get my guys in Valhalla and they will give me victory points. And then as the game progresses, you don't do any of that because the cards that you were drafted do not go into that strategy. but it is so cool. It plays over three rounds. Each round, Valhalla or Ragnarok will happen in a different part of the board, completely eliminating it for the rest of the game. So the board gets tighter as the game goes on. At the beginning of the game, it's like, oh, yeah, I got three guys here and you got two guys there. We can all live peacefully. Everything's fine. And then as the game goes on, more and more people have guys on the board. The number of minis goes up and the number of spaces goes down.
The corral tightens up.
Oh, man, it just gets nastier and nastier. And when somebody starts a fight, you can bring in units from like neighboring areas as well. But there's only so many spots in each of the different areas to actually put minis. It's cool. This is such an amazing game. They had a bunch of expansions for it as well that came out with different mythological monsters and gods and everything else. This is a really, really cool game. It is one of my favorite area control or area majority games out there. I'd say probably top three. And it is absolutely fantastic. It plays quick too. It's not a long playing game. You can actually hammer it off very quickly. And yeah, never had a bad time playing it, even when I'm losing horribly.
From my perception with this game, has nothing to do with this game, but the fact that this was the first of its nature to have minis make people go, you can do what with plastic now?
That's true. Yeah, that is.
And then to me, it just became a one-up match after when Blood Rage came out.
Yeah.
It was the next one.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Eric Lang and Steve for that. That's fantastic. Kickstarter appreciates you. Yeah.
I could spend how much more to get how many more minis?
I know. But it is melting.
Whether you have just the
basic retail version or if you have any of the other stuff to it, it plays fantastic.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game.
Yeah, it's a great, great game. Unlike a lot of other CMON games, if all you can get is the retail version, it's just not worth it. This one is still very much worth it in just the base set itself. Beautiful, beautiful game. It does show its age. I would love to see what they could do nowadays with this game because it would just look amazing.
As far as production.
Production value, which is incredible. But it's regardless, great, great game. If you've never tried Blood Rage, give Blood Rage a shot. It is cool. It is such a good game. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to make a quick comment on the fact that I think all of these games we've talked about so far deserve to be where they are. I would say Pokemon needs to be number one, but that's just me, eh? Blood Rage absolutely deserves a position. Yeah. This next one, because of your stance with Agricola, you might have issues with. But at 46 is Caverna, the Cave Farmers. From a simple cave, expand your dwarven home through mining, agriculture, and more. I've never played this, so I can't really get too deep into it. But this is Uwe Rosenberg. It came out in 2013, published by Lookout Games. Obviously, Clemens Franz is the artist. A lot of people basically say this is the, you know, Agricola, fantasy Agricola. I don't even want to get into which one's better because I do not have the context of experience to make even conjectured commentary on
that. Oh, you can always conjecture.
I will say I love them equally.
Yep.
But Chris, you come in on this one.
It's pretty cool. I think in Agricola, your house is kind of like an afterthought in the game. Like you can get some points by upgrading it, but and you need more rooms in order to hold your family members. But really, the house is not the focus of the game. It's the farming that's the focus of the game. And Caverna kind of brings it together so that it's the focus, it's the expanding of your house or your cave, as well as the farming, are equally important. And it's a really, really cool twist on it as well. I picked this game up when it came out initially because I had one of our people in our game group hated Agricola because they hated the feed your family thing, and food isn't quite as tight in this game here. But I just found that through playing it, I kept thinking, I'd rather be playing Agricola. I just think that it just brings everything down to a really nice package a little bit better than what this game does. It's still a great game. I think it's fantastic. But if I had the choice between the two, and, you know, I had sold off Agricola way back in the day when this one came out. I got rid of this one shortly after, and I've reacquired Agricola. And I don't really have interest in picking up this one here. I think it's a good game, and people do like it, but I'd much rather play the original. And I think that, you know, I think they're both very good games. There's no doubt about it, but I just like what Agricola does a lot better just because it's focused.
If their positions were switched, would you be happy?
Totally fine. Totally fine with that. Yep.
All right.
Yeah. And Caverna is a great game. There's no doubt about it. I would go back to the original.
Okay. Well, there we go. Well, let's continue because, you know, that's what we're doing. Number 45 is all yours.
Yay. This is one of my faves and also one of my favorite people in the world, too. The game is Cascadia. It's designed by Randy Flynn, who's a designer out of Seattle, who I had the great privilege of meeting and chatting with multiple times, at Shucks many years ago. Artist in this game is by Beth Sobel. She does an amazing job with the artwork here. And this is a tile drafting game where you are trying to create the most harmonious ecosystem as you puzzle together habitats and wildlife. And this is a really cool drafting game where each turn you have to take a tile and an animal, but they come in pairs. So sometimes you're like, I really, really need that tile because it will expand the territory that I want it to, but I don't really need another elk right now, or I have no space for an elk right now. And there's ways that you can, you know, move about that and spend tokens in order to do different things in the game. But it is really cool. Each of the animals will score in different ways, and they have a huge variety of scoring cards within the game. So you're never going to play the exact same game twice. Mm-hmm. They all have similar themes to them as to how they, like the salmon will always score in a very similar way to how salmon always score, but it's not the same as what bears do, for example. And then your territories, you're going to score points based on your largest cluster of each kind of territory that you have. So your largest forest and your largest mountain. And it is a really, really cool game. It plays quick. It is fun. There's enough thinking involved in it that people who like things that are a little bit heavier are not bored by this game. This is, right now, it's actually rated as the number one abstract game on BGG.
With those two layers of puzzles, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's a really fun game. I have the expansion for it. I've never played with the landmarks for it yet. But this is, and it's a game, again, I bought the expansion because I love the game and I love what they're doing with it. But I don't know if I need the landmarks necessarily. I'll definitely try it out soon, I hope, maybe in the next 2 weeks or so. And it's so cool. But yeah, Randy Flynn did a beautiful, beautiful, a modern day classic almost with this game here, because I think everybody still talks about it and compares other games to Cascadia. It came out in 2021, so it's still quite new.
Yeah.
But it's great. And they're going with this because they've got a new Kickstarter or crowdfunding campaign with a Roll and Write version of this game too.
Oh.
That's just currently out there. But I have not really looked at that too much because I don't need
that one. I'm happy with this. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Cascadia, great, great game. It sits as a place of pride on my shelf, it sits right next to Earth on a top shelf, showcased for all to see. And beautiful game.
everything you said. I love this game.
Absolutely. Very good game.
Yep. Cool. Well, 44, I know we both absolutely adore 44.
Yep.
It is heat, pedal to the metal. Manage your race car speed to keep from overheating, which is probably such a clever dynamic on that whole push your luck on overheating your car.
Yep.
It is designed, I'm going to completely like not even get these names properly.
Just do their first name.
Combines by Asger and Daniel.
Yeah.
artist by Vincent Dutre. I love his, his classics, that epic kind of nostalgic art style. Mm-hmm. And Days of Wonder. Yes, thank you for putting out a solid game again. And for me, Days of Wonder is always connected with good quality components and game. And this is by far, this is basically a race game by the two designers who gave you Flamme Rouge. And they take that card-driven momentum system or advancement system and manipulate the DNA a little bit to add this push your luck heat, engine heat to it. This is one of my favorite race games. Absolutely. There's so much. Now, again, there's four tracks that they send with you in the base game. Mm-hmm. And they give you such variability in the, I don't want to call them expansions, but the kind of campaign modes, right? You can add more, you can up the player level, I guess, by including different cards, different drafts.
Yeah. But a lot of companies would have given you a base game that would have been fun and easy to play.
Yeah.
And then they would have sold you and then several expansions with these modules to them, and Days of Wonder combined it all into one.
Yeah.
Now they are still doing expansions, which
I'm not, but there's so much in the box though that I've,
there is a lot of
everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't done a season yet. We keep saying that we got to do a season at some point. And I'm really looking forward to the first expansion that's coming out, which gives you a track in Japan and a track in Mexico and adds some other really cool elements to the game. But Days of Wonder, why did you include one new car in that game? Like, it should have been two. I'm sorry. It should have been two.
Publish in pairs, man.
It grinds me so much that they did that. So, but hey, that's fine. I mean, I'm going to pick them all up anyway, I'm pretty sure. It doesn't really matter in the end, but I just wish that they would have had components for an 8-player game right out of the box with the expansion.
No, I'm having a bit of a conundrum for the fact that I poo-pooed the whole height thing, and this game came out in 2022.
Really, 2023.
To where we're from, eh?
Yeah,
yeah. So it's relatively new, but
yeah.
I hope it stays where it's supposed to stay, because this is out of the gate, this is a fantastic game.
I'm a huge racing fan, huge Formula One fan. I love racing games for the most part, but none of them really have that like excitement of speed in them, I find. Like, they're very strategic. And this one here actually has that in it. And I think it's just absolutely wonderful. I love how the push your luck works in this game so, so well.
And setting up your hand for a straightaway.
Yeah, and there's just enough, what's the word I'm looking for? Just enough, like, because you can play cards where you don't know exactly how far you're going to move.
Yeah.
And there's just enough risk involved in that as well that, you know, leaves it up to the luck gods that are out there. I mean, the last game of it that we played, I lost it on the very last turn because...
Spun out!
No, I didn't spun out. I didn't spin out. I needed anything but a one.
Oh!
And I got the one, and I didn't make the corner. So I had spent another turn going through the corner, and it lost. There's two of us that both were in the same situation. And just Kirk, so we both lost our...
I hiccup in the turn.
Because of that. Yeah, and that's fine. It was a great, great game. I absolutely adored it. Well deserving to be asked here.
43. That's on
43
you.
43 is on to me. Sorry, I have to back up here because
that's right.
Focused on so much. Puerto Rico. This is a game from 2002, designed by Andreas Seyfarth. And artist is Franz Wolwinkel. Man, that sounds like a Disney character. This is a very, very classic game with a little bit of controversy, where you are shipping goods, constructing buildings, and choosing roles that benefit you more than others. And this game has this really cool thing where each turn or each round, everybody's going to play a card down that says what action you're going to take, and everybody else can benefit at the same time. But if you play the card, then you're going to get a better action out of it as well. And it's a really cool mechanism. It has been used in several games since. I think San Juan also uses something similar by the same designer. San Juan. Yeah. And Race for the Galaxy also does it as well.
A lot of games have been doing that major action, minor action.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Puerto Rico kind of kicked it all off.
Yeah.
Very, very good game. Race for the Galaxy does everything that this game does, though I think much better. I did recently play this game, and I say recently, like in the last couple of years, and it doesn't hold its value the same way that it used to. It was an amazing game when it came out, it's 22 years old now, and it definitely is starting to show its age. I think we played the 20th anniversary version of this game, and it's just not... it's just not as solid as I remembered it being.
Yeah.
But I do think, again, it deserves to be on the list because it really kicked off a whole genre of games because of this. So in my mind, it is well-deserving to be in this position here. You also have to, you can't focus on the colonial theme of this game I know some people are very focused on that and will never play it because of that.
I've used this expression. You can't blame the Flintstones for being the Flintstones during a time where they didn't know that being the Flintstones was being the Flintstones.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the themes that are in this are being glorified by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a part of our history and is a part that we need to learn from. And if we just brush all of that aside, we never learn from that past. And it's been said over and over again.
And it's good to know that we've developed empathy in our hobby since that point. I mean, if we had not, then there's a problem there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, the board game world, it's not all monopolies and risks out there. I mean, we need to learn from these things, and maybe some people wouldn't realize what actually happened without some of these games. There's so much that I have learned about history that I had no idea about that I wouldn't have learned without board games. And that's a topic for another day. Puerto Rico, great, great design, doesn't hold its weight quite the same way as it used to. I can definitely see this one slowly falling down the top 100, falling out. But I think it should always be in the top 100 in some way, shape, or form.
Now, this next one, I hope rises to the surface. Hey, segue. at number 42 is Underwater Cities by Vladimir Suchi. Look how that fell upon itself.
Yeah.
As I said before, I love Vladimir Suchi. This is designed by Delicious Games, his own company. Develop future cities on the seafloor through politics, production, and science. This is... deck builder, Tableau. This is basically terraforming Mars underwater, for me at least.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people. Yeah.
This over terraforming Mars. For one, that it all has consistent art. this is such a cool game that as far as how you develop this and develop your own underwater city board in front of you. It is, and again, they don't look like submarines, but your tokens or your worker placement tokens are these submarines that you put in three different colored zones. And these three different colored zones are associated with cards that you have that you play, that if you can make that synergistic connection of playing the same color card in the same color zone, you get to do the full action rather than just partial. So there's such efficiency going on in this game. You're growing. The more you cover up, the more you bonus action. That whole I don't want to, it's not asymmetric, but it's just the way the branches that you take develop the system of game that you're playing. I adore this game. This is so much that I bought the deluxe version so that I could have those two layered boards for, So I definitely think this is appropriate position for this game. This to me is the coup de grace of Vladimir Succi. Probably for me at least his, I don't want to say heavier, but more, you're dialed in, like you're tunnel visioned on this game. And and you're planning, you're trying to plan three steps ahead and making sure that you better not take that spot. And if you do, well, I can only take, there's one little spot that allows me to take another spot on the board. And if you take that spot, I'm hooped this round, right?
Yeah.
So there's all of that FOMO, right? This is such a good game.
Yeah, I haven't played it. I think because I love Terraforming Mars so much, and so many people that I have talked to say that this replaced Terraforming Mars, and I don't want to replace Terraforming Mars. So
I need the chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't played Underwater Cities, and I do want to try it at some point. I believe Kadu has a copy as well. I know he used to anyway. And I should really give it a try, but I just don't want to replace TN.
I don't want to be tempted.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because it is, yeah, I mean,
I should include some squeeze right now. Tempted.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nice. But yeah, well deserving, I believe, on the list there.
Yeah. So
sweet.
You get the last one.
Yeah. The final game for today. I unfortunately haven't ever played it, and I don't think you have either.
I played the first edition.
This is Pax Pamir, in the 41 spot, second edition, designed by Cole Worley, artist Cole Worley, publisher Worley Gig Games. You sense a theme here. And in this game, you are trying to swing the tides of the quote unquote great game as countries vie for control of Afghanistan. So this is 19th century Afghan leaders attempting to forge a new state. And this is in the whole Pax series of games, which I've played a couple of. I like Pax Porfiriana, which is the Mexican themed one. And I think this is based on that whole same design where you have a card market where you are trying to purchase cards from and whatnot. This game looks beautiful. It actually has like a cloth board for it. And all of the pieces are these pastel-y type colors.
Porcelain-y type of. Yeah.
It looks absolutely beautiful. But yeah, I haven't ever played it. You like you said, you played the first edition of it.
I played the first edition, which was part of, I forget what the company that he was with before this. Sierra Games, I think it was.
Yeah, Sierra Madre. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the designer of the PAX series initially. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had also PAX Furiana, and it was like I couldn't play the game without having the rule book beside me and someone trying to interpret the rule book beside the rule book. Mm-hmm. That was the kind of depth that this game had. Now, I only played solo, so, you know, there might be some deeper synergy of understanding and game flow if there's more at the table that, you know, shared brain of the rules kind of thing. But it didn't click for me, but I did appreciate the design aspect of this game in regards to multifaceted card powers that are connected with the, I think, three levels of win potential in the game of circumstances. If this happens, then you can try to win this way. If this happens, then you can try and win this way. And To me, it made me feel like I was failing at playing Sherlock Holmes.
It's one of those games I think, to me, and again, I'm going to go to Pax Porfiriana a little bit as my reference on this one here. It's a really cool game, but I feel because they're trying to simulate this historical period so closely that the game kind of suffers a little bit from it. And that might be a controversial opinion, I don't know, but I just find that you're really shoehorned into doing things in a very specific way. And I do think that this game, it looks beautiful, and it's really brought that whole PAX series to the forefront, and it keeps developing and changing and evolving over time.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this really deserves to be as highly rated as it is.
Well, I was just going to say, everything we've said, there are people that this game clicks with.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely. And Phil Eklund, back to Sierra Madre, Phil Eklund, I believe, is a rocket scientist.
Yep.
So a lot of his games and his design philosophy, and Cole Worley worked with him and mentored, I believe, with him, that they are going to lean into that simulation over narration.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I would love to see, and I think that this version here is maybe a little bit more accessible than what the first edition was.
They softened it up.
Yeah, they softened the edges a little bit more on here. And yeah, it's still a game that I do want to try. I just have to find the right opportunity to be able to play it, and somebody who is familiar with the game enough to actually teach us the rules on it.
I need a couple Sherpa guides if I play this game.
Yeah, exactly. But it is cool. And I don't think, I can't even remember on this, but I don't think you actually own the pieces on the board that you place. I think that they are representing them.
Yeah.
But other people can actually take those pieces and use them.
And the pieces themselves, depending on how you place them, represent different things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's abstract in its nature.
Very abstract. Yeah. It's a really neat game, and I love the fact that we have games like this.
Yeah.
That are rated up there so high.
And I would still play it, but like I said, I need a lot of hand holding.
Exactly. But very, very cool game.
Right on. Well, that's a good way to segue out of here is hand holding.
Totally.
And this was a good batch of games, I have to admit.
I think that's, PAX Premier was the only one that, we really don't have much familiar with at all between the two of us combined.
Yeah.
But man, some very, very good games in that list, and it's just going to keep getting better and better.
Yeah. Good conversations, good games.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the conversation, Chris, and thanks
to those
people who are still listening.
Yay.
Yep. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Anything on the way out?
Nothing I can think of except, wish me luck in not going down that CCG rabbit hole.
Yeah, you're not going to spend anything.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, take care, everybody.
Yeah, have a good one.